When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time, a Wave Sports and Entertainment original presented by Prize Picks. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Subscribe, like, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We're going to talk about NBA playoff action. It is fantastic. It is my single favorite time of the sporting calendar. I love the playoffs in a way that I cannot express. And unfortunately, the way that I express most how much I love the playoffs is by being sleepy. I'm so sleepy right now. Like, we had a confluence of a lot of things going on. Saturday was Saturday, IYKYK. And then you add to that that we had a whole lot of playoff action, 2 straight days. We're going to be back at it tonight. What's the late game? Damn, it's the Lakers and the Nuggets. I actually want to watch that. Damn, I was going to say at least I could take a nap during the Magic and the Cavs, but then it's going to be the Sixers and the Knicks, and I want to watch that too. So maybe I can just get that 30 minutes, like get some dinner and then get a 30-minute nap through the first quarter of Orlando and Cleveland. I don't even know why I'm calling it the first quarter. I ain't trying to watch that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I might watch it. I'm not going to pretend like I'm opposed. Like, if it gets to game 6, I'm not just going to run away. But they going to keep on presenting me options, and I'm going to keep on declining. And I know they don't care if I watch that game. I know that nobody cares if I watch that game except for people in Orlando and Cleveland. And you know how I know nobody cares if I watch that game? That's right. This game has clearly been adopted as an East Coast, not even just an East Coast. It's going to be there's another one that's going to be the same fate. This is a series ready-made for NBA TV. I ain't even looked at the sheet, Shaw, but you know who else I can guarantee you is going to get a lot of run on NBA TV? The Pacers and the Bucks. That's what's going to be on NBA TV.
Yeah, both the Magic and Cavs, they don't have a game on a national broadcast. The Bucks and Pacers will most likely get a NBA TV push because that series shockingly will go 4 games. I thought the Pacers would put more of a fight, but no Giannis and they lose by, I don't know, 30?
Yes, I would like to say, by the way, I just looked it up. And yes, Tuesday night, you can see Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers against Dave Lillard and the Milwaukee Bucks at 8:30. PM on NBA TV. The Suns and the Timberwolves will have been playing for an hour. They are hoping that maybe during halftime, you'll have time to look up what channel NBA TV is anyway, and then click over. Nope. And then you're going to go right back, right?
You know how that game's cooked is because they probably won't even put the box score on the top right during the Suns Timberwolves game.
Right. It'll say Pacers Timberwolves, and this is what the score is. Just a shoulder shrug. Who's to say? Who's to say? Right? But oh no, we're gonna get to that point. Do they still play Charmed on TNT? I guess I don't have my cable don't work like this no more. I now got one of them cable services where when you turn it on, it automatically goes back to channel 1. It doesn't go to the last channel. But Sean, I would like that. This was wake up to Charm season. You know what I'm saying? You roll over on the couch. Maybe you decide to crash the whole night there, but you go to bed or whatever, but you come and turn that TV back on and boom, it's all Charmed.
There was like a 5-year stretch where it was Bones and I watched way more episodes of Bones than I care to admit.
Man, because that was the thing. Like, when you really get into playoffs, that's when you decide you're going to stay up for Inside the NBA and go the whole way with it. Right. And then take whatever comes on after that. Like, you don't have to. You got to understand either the game was great or the game was awful. If we decided to stick around all the way through Inside the NBA, like we had to find out, like you live on the West Coast now. It ain't so difficult for you. It take a real effort. That's why they be on there wilding, man. It'd be on 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, man. They can say whatever the hell they damn well please on that show.
Sometimes I almost prefer if it's a bad game because then they're just loose. Like they're pissed. Chuck is angry. Shaq's asleep. You know, I'm like, that's peak That's why they win Emmys. It's games like that.
Which one of them you think snored the loudest, Shaq or Chuck?
Shaq for sure. I mean, that guy probably has a sleep apnea machine. And
it's a tough call, but you may be right. But Saturday, we had two games. Well, actually, no, Saturday, I feel like we had three games that were of interest. And then, of course, we had the Magic and the Cavs. But Minnesota versus the Suns. And Minnesota beat the brakes off the Suns. And Anthony Edwards was absolutely in his bag. Sean, can we show people, though, what Anthony Edwards is doing? Like, I turned it on. I was like, he is clearly talking cash shit to these boys. And there's Anthony Edwards clearly talking cash shit to Kevin Durant, who's kind of impervious. And I saw something where they said they was translating where Anthony Edwards was out there saying, and I don't remember exactly what he was out there saying. And Sean, do we have it where he threw up the three at Brad Beal? I want to be clear, this is a three, not what, you know, I don't know what the, yeah, I don't know what the new gangs do, but I'm just putting up three fingers as in 3 points. I don't want you to think that I'm repping for a set. But he was talking so crazy to Brad Beal, and he put a three up for him with a right there, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, he real young to really have mastered the, like, the lip cock to the side and do all this. But it was one of them sites I went to, or one of those accounts, and they were saying something about how they had figured out what Anthony Edwards was saying, and he kept calling people old asses. Like, that's what his thing is. He always want to call somebody old. And, like, Sean, you know, we've talked about this since we've known each other, and people who go back with me know this. I love the Ant-Man. Like, they is, I root for the Ant-Man in a very particular and important way. You know what I mean? Like I want great things for him. But this old shit needs to stop. You know what I'm saying? Clear. Oh, you don't know what I'm saying. Okay, I'm going to fill this in.
No, I do. I wanted to let it linger, but he is 22 years old, born in 2001, which is alarming.
Yeah, it is. Look, you'll be lucky if you get old, okay? That's what I need. You will be fortunate. Right, like the great Black Thought line, learn the rules, little homie, you can be one too, right? He out there calling, and the people he calling old, I'm way older than, don't do this to me, bro. Don't. And the thing is, I'm not defensive about being old. I actually take a measure of pride in it. I got a real frustration with my peers who can't just acknowledge that we ain't kids no more, and they be out here trying to do all the nonsense that the youngsters do. Out here trying to listen to the same music and wear the same clothes. And I got to be honest, you don't feel like a doofus? You know what I'm saying? And there's blame to go to the kids. Your parents listen to the same music as you. How are you not mortified, right? How do you not reject that music as a result? Y'all are a bunch of dorks yourselves. But anyway, all I'm saying is, like, it's the disrespect I got a problem with. I was under the impression that by the time I got to be this age, I was going to start commanding a different level of respect from these kids. And they out here doing stuff like he doing right now. And I want to root for him, and I want him to stop, because if he keep doing this, then his little peers are going to think that they able to do this. And I'm going to be honest with you. There's really only going to be one technique that we got in our bag in order to curb this. And that's, I mean, we just have to start slapping the shit out of y'all.
Yeah, I think if Anthony Edwards continues to call KD, who's 35 years old, I think someone's going to get smacked real quick.
No, somebody needs to do it. Like, that's all we got. That's the only recourse that we really going to have here is just big, wide palm, open hand. And I'm not talking about doing this to Anthony Edwards. I want to be clear. I'm talking about doing this to your children. You listening to this right now. If I had to guess, and I could be wrong, okay? But if I had to guess, I would love to slap the shit out of your child. I really would. Like, I mean, and I got to be honest with you. I'm pretty sure that you would also like for me to do that. Because y'all ain't fooling me on Instagram. See, it's a thing that be going on Instagram, and I don't think enough people talk about this as a phenomenon. We are all understood and we trained to get this, and we see it as it happened, which is people misrepresenting their interpersonal relationships on Instagram, specifically their romantic relationships, and giving the impression that they happier than they really are, right? And we also see like, if we being real about it, it's a lot of deadbeat dads who take a bunch of pictures all at one time and then intersperse them through their timeline over the course of time. Or you know the people who it seems like they've been on the same vacation for 4 months. You know what I mean? Like, you know who we talking about here, right? It's people out here telling a lot of stories, kind of doing a lot of fibbing. But I really feel like the biggest lie that we see on Instagram from y'all is y'all pretending like you get along with your teenage children. That's just simply impossible. That's not how this works, right? Y'all be really out here like, oh man, I'm the coolest 14-year-old I know. You hate that boy. I know you hate that boy. You can't stand him, right? Like, oh boy, I'm so amazed by my 15-year-old. You're amazed that you have not done harm to that child, because that's what teenagers do. They make you want to harm them. Like, this is how it goes. Y'all ain't fooling me. So all I'm saying is, right, somebody out here raising a disrespectful little man like the Ant-Man that's out here just up in people's faces calling them old like that. That's y'all who doing that. And the only reason that it's y'all who's doing that is y'all ain't regulate on this enough in the beginning. They need to be like, yo, old. Oh, wow. Old directly translates into the ability to twist my head off like the top of a jelly jar. That's what y'all supposed to be out here imparting to kids that you're not. But instead, I got the Ant-Man ruining all the goodwill that he has built up with me, calling 35-year-old people old, right? It's kind of like how I feel. Like, Sean, I moved to the place now. I feel when people call Kevin Durant old the way I feel when people call Kevin Durant skinny, which is to say, oh my God, what do you think of me?
You're like, don't I check off these boxes?
Yeah, I'm like, if you think that he's skinny, my goodness, right? We are moving quickly into the world of emaciated. I am catching a stray. Like, you want to call him ashy? Cool. I'll be putting in work over here about that one. You know what I'm saying? But the skinny, I've been around Kevin Durant. If he's skinny, I got problems. Anyway, speaking of having problems, Joel Embiid's got a knee problem. He had the meniscus surgery earlier. He doing that warrior thing where he coming back trying to play, and it is obvious that he is in excruciating pain, but it's one of those injuries where they feel like it's structurally sound, and so the only problem is that it hurts. So he can basically play up to his pain threshold, and that has got to be perhaps the worst feeling that you can have as a basketball player or as an athlete or anybody really, because basically what they've told the world when they say that is as follows. He can go until he punks out. That's what they're saying. There's nobody over there that's going to be like, hey, we got to get you out of there for your own good. Because they're saying for his own good, it can't get any worse. Nobody's going to do that. They only going to stop it all because your feely wheelings get hurt. That's the way everybody looking at that. And bruh, that's right there on the screen is when Joel Embiid was laying on the ground after he tried to, well, he didn't try, he did it. He did a dinner served against Mr. Robinson. He threw the ball off the glass, went up, caught it, dunked it, landed on his knee, and you could just see it in his face. He's in pain. He hit the ground. He grabs it. He's rolling around. And I'm listening on the broadcast, Sean, and I think it was Doris and JJ, and they talking about how, you know, well, the real thing that happens, or I think they went to like a sideline interview later with Lisa Salters, and they're like, well, the thing he just needs to do is get confident in the knee, and that's the hardest part, is develop a confidence that your knee can handle it. And then once you develop the confidence, then you keep going. And I felt like, I don't mean to be dramatic, Sean, but I felt like I was being gaslit. I saw the big dude laying on the ground holding his knee in pain.
Isn't the confidence doing that dunk or attempting that? You know, like, he's clearly confident and he's just hurting.
It's just hurting. It hurts really bad. And they always say it's the difference between being hurt and being injured. And they basically say it, as long as you ain't no punk, maybe you can come out here and make this happen. And I would hate to be living under those circumstances that Joel Embiid is in. Because look, he played as well as one could expect based on what we saw. However, it didn't look like he had any business really out there playing. He had business out there playing because he's better than the alternative that they could roll out there. But I did not watch that and feel like they could win. I saw some Sixers fans were a little salty with me over the weekend because they couldn't understand why I did not think that the Sixers had any chance in this series. And now I feel like you see why I thought they didn't have any chance in this series, because Embiid is hurt. Like, I think it was Alan Hahn who made the point on ESPN. Y'all think Embiid going to do on one leg what he ain't been able to do on two? Like, is that what y'all think is going to happen? No, man, it's not going to go. That dude's in pain. I wish him the best. I really do. Because, like, They say he's going out like a warrior. He got two choices, Sean. Either after this series, we're going to call him a warrior or a sucker. There's no in between.
There's no reason to jeopardize your career. And the news reports this morning are Tyrese Maxey is questionable with an illness. So it's like, do you just give up game two because Embiid's going to take a night off and Maxey's going to take a night off? It might be.
But what they're saying, though, is it's not endangering his career because there's no structural problems. That's the problem. He can't even use that story. Everybody like, you basically rub some dirt on it.
The doctors are gaslighting him.
Let's get a bunch of rub some dirt on it. Walk it off. You'll be all right. Right? He's getting all of those. Last game for Saturday we want to talk about is the Lakers and the Nuggets. I went to go watch it at my buddy's Nick's house. I thought about stopping by the NBA store and getting a Jokic jersey and coming in. I did not do that. He told me that might have been a little bit too much. I'm going to do it at some point. But anyway, hey, Sean, this isn't going to take very long, is it?
I don't think so. The Lakers had a hell of a first quarter. I'll say that. A really, really good for even first half. And it's just, you really can't stop that Nuggets team, like you were saying, all year.
Here's their problem. Like, what really had to be disheartening for them about that game is that they're taking LeBron and Jokic are basically sitting at the same time. One of them sits, the other one's going to sit. That's how they sneak the rest, which is leaving a lot of Anthony Davis minutes without Jokic on the floor. And the Lakers aren't winning those. And that's a big problem. I can't believe that this version of LeBron James exists at age 39 in year 21. I cannot believe that he looked the way that he did in that game. But even him looking the way that he did, the champs are over there and the king is over there. Right? Like LeBron, like he like all time, like you want to say he the all time king because, you know, all right, whatever. Right. But the man right now, the man that's running this right now, even my buddy Nick has to acknowledge this. The man running it right now is Jokic. He's the one. And Sean, they can't do a damn thing with him. I love it when he starts with the, I think I'm going to shoot up here from the top. And then he realizes he can't do it. Never mind. I'm just going to bang you in the chest until you're in the take the charge circle. And then without jumping, I am going to softly offer a layup that will hit the rim four times.
I can't imagine being a defender playing against him. He had 32, 12, and 7, and it looked casual. It looked so effortless. It's really got to be frustrating.
I told you I work with a woman at ESPN.com once who told me that she felt sometimes like her job was just to say it'd be a lot easier to read if you turn this light on, right? Like there's a real value in having such an outlook on how things go. But I think about that with Jokic. Like I think I was talking to my brother about this and I'm like, Jokic is the first person to ever realize that if you hit somebody with a pump fake, you don't need to hurry anymore. Right? Like everybody hits you with a pump fake. They're like, oh snap, let me hurry up and do it before they come back. They're not coming back, man. He in the third row. Jokic's the first person to hit you with that pump fake and then realize, oh man, I got all the time in the world. Right? Like the pump fake for him was not, for everybody else, the pump fake has been to get a clear view of the basket. For him, it's just to buy some time. He's just not in a hurry.
It's just looking at them as they drive past you. You know, you want to get a good look at them.
Like he's the only guy to figure out, I don't really need to be in such a hurry to get to the rim. I can just take my time. Like, you know, they show those heat maps that show that all the shots now are three-pointers and layups, and it's not really a mid-range game. Jokic's the only one that's bringing the mid-range game back because y'all in such a hurry to get to the rim. And Jokic is like, why would I do that when I can make an 8-footer? Right? I can make this 10-footer. These are very easy shots also. And if you have a problem with me taking this, I will get these assists that shouldn't even count for assists. Jokic be out here passing up a 5-footer to throw a oop to Aaron Gordon. Is that really an assist?
He's almost too generous, you know?
Yeah. He's just like, okay, this is how I keep these dudes happy. Okay, cool. I'll throw the ball. Let me tell you something else. Well, I had this realization. You know what? I'll make this point when we talk about the Sunday games. Got to admit, Sean, our break that we do in between topics didn't feel the same, but all we're going to do is talk about the other basketball games.
You know, we almost sped up a day. You know, we're just like, you know, cutting it off. The sun goes down. We're back.
Oh, no. We can make them feel like they got it, though. We can make them feel like they got it. Put up that poll. The Athletic did a poll on lots of polls, but the most overrated player in the NBA poll. We go ahead and throw this up here. Yes, take your time. According to the players, this isn't going to surprise many of you, but they believe that Rudy Gobert is the most overrated player in the NBA. And let me tell you something that has become abundantly clear to me. Rudy Gobert, I don't think any player who is ultimately going to go to the Hall of Fame has ever commanded less respect from his peers while having more of a quantifiable impact on basketball than Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert be coming to these games, shutting down the paint, clearly affects team defense in a way that very few people in the NBA do. Sean, none of the guys in the NBA care.
I really think everyone's still salty about his COVID thing where he's touching all the mics. They'll never forget about that, and they'll hold it over him because, you know, you said it earlier, Karl Anthony Towns being on the bottom of the list says something as well.
Yo, how is he not higher? You know me. You gotta put that list back up there. They got Karl Towns down there at something like 3.7%. And I'm like, oh, no, we definitely get him. Carl. Also, by the way, down there in the others receiving votes was Luka Doncic. And let me tell you something. I would bet all the money in the world. I'll put it like this. That voter ain't from Slovenia. How about we say it like that? But we go back up here with Rudy Gobert. Jordan Poole. How is Jordan Poole this high on the list? Who's out here rating Jordan Poole?
Who's thinking about him? The rating?
Right. Now, number three should have been number one to me. I can't think of anybody in the NBA more overrated than Trae Young, which for me, I guess, is just really down to the fact that I don't think you can win with Trae Young. Hard stop. I don't think there's anybody else on that list that I look at and I say, you just can't win with that person. I can't say that you just can't win with Jordan Poole because somebody actually did it. Right? Like, I've seen it. Well, there's Carl. This Carl. By the way, and I'm going to say this about Karl Towns. I'm not picking on the dude, but it is something to watch out for. And Sean, you've heard me say it here, talking about, like, does he make the Timberwolves better? Like, are they a better team with Naz Reid on the floor?
I don't know, because I love Naz Reid, and they played really well in that stretch when Kat was out.
I'm just saying this, and this is just one game. Okay. Karl Towns had great stats in that game. He was 5-for-9 from the floor and scored 19 points, right? Like, he's 8-for-8 from the line. He had 7 boards. He had 4 assists. This is all in 27 minutes, right? He's a hack master, but whatever, right? But he did all of that in 27 minutes. But in those 27 minutes, the Timberwolves were a -2. In Naz Reid's 19 minutes, they were a +22. That's something to watch.
Numbers don't lie.
That's all I'm saying, right? There's something to watch in that. By the way, that game was on Saturday, so we will get here to these Sunday games. Sean, I don't know if your California ass woke up early enough to get a watch of what in the world Boston did to Miami, but that ain't going to take very long, playboy.
That was a see-the-box-score-when-I-wake-up kind of game. I think I know where the way that series is going, especially with Jimmy Butler not playing.
So something that's interesting to me about Boston that I really hadn't given a lot of thought to, and I have this thought all the time when I watch Denver. Remember, there was a time, right, where Orlando, I want to say, gave Aaron Gordon a max contract, and their decision is that they were going to build that thing around Aaron Gordon because I guess Aaron Gordon was the guy that they had. And then you realize that to win a championship, Aaron Gordon needs to be your number four because that's what he is in Denver, right? He is the number four offensive option, and it wasn't that long ago that somebody was trying to make him the number one. It also was not that long ago that the New York Knicks thought that they had to make Kristaps Porzingis their number one option. And now Porzingis is the number three guy in Boston, and it sure does seem to be working out well now, doesn't it?
They're going to be a really scary team for the East. I think.
Yeah.
All those guys are doing the right thing in the right role. Finally, you know, yeah. Like you're saying.
But sometimes you got to recognize that, like, being the number two or the number three or the number four pick, that does not mean that you're a franchise player. Like, Karl Towns, for example, is the number one pick, but I understood why somebody would try there, right? Like, I think all the tools were there. You just, you know, we are who we are. But all the tools and stuff were there. I could see why you would make that decision, but I always give them credit when they got Anthony to realize, oh, okay, cool, we can move off of this. But so many guys that teams try to force into being their number one options because he's the number one option that they have at the time. And then you go realize that to truly win with those guys, they need to be a number three or number four. Like, they should probably be cutting bait on a lot of these cats a lot sooner because you know after 2-3 years whether they go turn into that kind of player or not. And so I look at Porzingis with Boston and I just thought about it like, oh no, he comfortably settles in to where a guy like him is probably supposed to be. I watched the Clippers and the Mavericks for a little while. I expected a lot more out of that game. I mean, somebody asked me in that game started, they asked me, I think the Clippers had a chance to win these series without Kawhi? And I said wholeheartedly, emphatically, no. Next thing I knew, they was winning by 30 points.
I don't think the Mavs are going to shoot like 25% from the field for the entirety of the first three quarters, but I don't know if we, you know, it's not saying much, but if we get another James Harden performance like this without Kawhi playing, it's, you know, Clippers can make a run.
So something to keep in mind about the Clippers, if they can get Kawhi back, and my guess is he's not going to play, right? Like, I'll just throw this, if it's what this is, I would not assume that he is going to play. But my observation about Paul George has really always been this. He can be your number one option. I've seen a team go to game seven of the Eastern Conference Finals with Paul George as their number one option. Like, it seems easy to forget that that happened, but it has happened, okay? We saw, what was it, 2 years ago when Kawhi got hurt in the playoffs, and we saw Paul George step up and carry them as a number one option. He can be your number one. He can be your number three. It gets weird when he's your number two. Like, I don't really have a great explanation for it. It feels kind of anecdotal as I say it. But if they're in a situation where he's the three, like where they got Kawhi out there, they got James Harden, and Paul George can kind of fit in as spot-up shooter who can also get his shot, like with a second unit or where somebody needs it, that might be the max way to get this. Like, it seems like he doesn't quite know what to do if he's the number two guy. But if you make him the number one, he knows how to handle that and he can do it. Like, when we laughed at that playoff P stuff when he was playing so poorly in the playoffs, that was kind of Paul George's number two guy. But when we've seen him be one and three, just saying, maybe that's what we'll find out in this series, because I think he's their number one. He'll be their number one here, and maybe what James Harden needs to be is your number two.
It's like a rhythm thing in that number two spot for him where he can't really get it. But number three, like you said, he can run around screens, get a jumper off, but he's good in the number one. He just needs a second hand. And, you know, hopefully James or Westbrook step up in that way.
Here's the tricky thing about James Harden. Okay. They can't win a championship because him. Right? We all agree there. Is there anybody that's really going to fight me about this? The argument against the Clippers winning the championship is James Harden. But the thing about James Harden is he's not always useless, right? Like, he was useless for pretty much the entirety of the 2012 NBA Finals. That time he was almost useless. He's not always useless. Last year in that series against Boston, he put him on his back for some of those games without Embiid. But there's going to be a point where you really, 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 really need him. And he's useless. Like, useless in a way where you'd be better off. Like, I once said this, and I mean, like a deadbeat dad is always going to let you down, right? But if your dad's dead, you know what to expect.
You're kind of not wrong. It's a real heavy way to put it.
I'm not wrong at all. I know how correct I am. But that's the problem with James Harden. You'd be better off if he was dead, right? Like, every now and then he'd be showing up, right? He'd be coming through. He got gifts. He got candy. He might even help you with your homework, right? 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 But it's the first of the month. Where he at?
He's showing up as a ghost, balls going through him. Yeah, and stuff.
It's like, oh no, it's cool. We don't need the money till the fifth. But then they come the fifth. Then we go over there. This dude says, what does Bomani know about deadbeat dads? I know y'all. I know you. I know your dads. Some of y'all, I would know your kids, except that's exactly the problem that we're talking about. Somebody said it's a dark metaphor. Yeah, it wasn't really dark. People keep calling it dark. I'm sorry. I guess dark and funny are not like mutually exclusive. It's, I said that once on a video. When I used to do YouTube videos, that was a line I used. That was like, a deadbeat dad will let you down, but a dead one will never disappoint. And then I just sat there and went, what? Because everybody in the room, they even knew that the line was coming. And they were like, it's a little tight. It's a little tight. Anyway, moving on. Oklahoma City's not going to be around very long. I feel very confident saying that. And Sean, it is strictly because they are lighting the keister.
Man, that was, didn't that game remind you of like 90s basketball? Just like.
Yes, it did.
Fighting for every bucket, stretches where no one scored. I kind of loved it.
Yeah. Look, Oklahoma City, I mean, New Orleans got one strategy here that's going to work, and they just got to out-tough these kids, right? Like, that's going to be the move they have to make. Valanciunas had 20 boards. because Oklahoma City's lighting the keister. Chet Holmgren. In fact, that's not just him. Outside of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they got a team full of dudes. And Gordon Hayward, who, by the way, still in the league. They got a team full of dudes that don't know nothing about what these playoffs are. And they just light in the ass.
Simple as that.
That's it. Like, I think they'll win this series. But whoever they get next, I don't see it. I just think they're too light in the keister. You can't win the West being as kind of flimsy as they are. But get ready next year, man. When Sam make them moves, get ready. And right fast, the NBA TV classic between the Pacers and the Bucks. Did you expect Dame to go off for 35 in the first half?
Zero expectations there. And it makes sense now in hindsight when Tyrese Halliburton during the in-season tournament did the Dame time. And I don't think I don't think Dame forgot about that one bit.
I forgot about that. Halliburton has also not been playing well. I said earlier in the season that he was clearly better than Ja Morant. And Tyrese Halliburton hates me so much. He's like, watch how wrong I'm going to make you look. Like, I feel like he out here Jahtay Portering with my reputation. You know what I'm saying?
I also think, you know, we brought up the injuries earlier. Halliburton had a bad knee injury and is now playing through it since he's been back. I don't think he's fully 100%, but yeah,
you're
it's
right.
Like, you know,
you're right.
Maybe sit
you're
it
right.
out.
You're right. Sometimes it's not about me. You're right. I get it. Also, though, Indiana, another team that's lighting the keister. By the way, how does Miles Turner still play there? Miles Turner has been, like, they got to start charging Miles Turner rent on the trade block. Like, he's been on the trade block for 3 years, it feels like. I look up like, goddamn, he still play for y'all?
Dude should have been on the Lakers 4 different times.
Basically, they are set. Like, it's like Miles Turner sleeps on the couch, or he sleeps he stay in the basement now. He just come upstairs before the kids wake up. The NBA playoffs have officially begun, and it's the best time to get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with playoff basketball and hockey entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. And if you stick around for the end of the show, you'll hear picks from our producer, Sean, that could potentially help you win big. Prize Picks is really simple to play. You can make your picks and submit your entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. So make sure you go to prizepicks.com/Bomani and use code Bomani for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/Bomani. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. Spring is here, which means there's more daylight and sunshine in our lives. Shout out to our friends at Shady Rays, who have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. Shady Rays offers a world-class product, rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures. They have plenty of styles and colors to pick from, so finding your next pair of shades is a breeze. Plus, if your shades go MIA or take a hit, don't sweat it. They've got lost and broken protection, so you're covered from day one. Wear your Shady Rays with confidence because they have your back long after you purchase. If you don't love your shades, exchange or return them for free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Exclusively for our listeners, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use code BOMANI for 50% off 2 or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, here's our first story of the day.
Hi, I'm Peter Kafka, and I'm the chief correspondent at Business Insider. And today I wanted to talk to you about VR devices like Meta's Oculus and Quest goggles and Apple's Vision Pro, specifically about the fact that no one seems to know what to do with these things. Meta has sold at least 20 million of its VR devices, which sounds good, but a new survey of teenagers reports that the majority of teens, 56%, who say they have a VR device, say they almost never use it. And the trend is not good. When teens were asked about the same question back in 2022, 48% said they never used the devices they owned. Bear in mind that Meta has been making these things for some time, and that unlike Apple goggles, there are a lot of apps designed for Meta's devices. You can play games with them, you can work out with them. I don't know why you would, but you could. So one view of these numbers is that virtual reality goggles are something big tech companies think people want, but that regular people don't really have a use for. But if you want a more optimistic view, or at least optimistic for tech companies, is that people will want these things one day, just as soon as someone creates a bona fide killer app for one.
Yeah, they keep trying to get that going. And it is seen very clearly to be the bridge too far. It is not something that demand actually exists for. And they say the teens don't use them. And Sean, I don't know this much about this. I know you don't have kids, but you're a little closer to kid age, right? Like you've been there since I've been there. Maybe you have the answer to this. Like, are parents able to see like what websites their kids go to?
Yeah, I think there's more protections now than when I was a kid. And, you know, okay. There's always protections and stuff too. But
because all I'm saying is, if I were 16 or 15, I can certainly think of one place where them virtual reality goggles might come in extra handy, shall we say. But if your mama knows what you're watching, you can't even do that. So take this shit back to the store. What's the next story?
Hey, I'm Jacob Stern, a staff writer at The Atlantic. And this week I wrote about the death of the laugh track. Laugh tracks have been around since the beginning of TV sitcoms, and they've been widely hated pretty much as long, going all the way back to the 1960s, when TV Guide published an expose revealing that many of the laughs viewers heard on TV were not real. They were added in artificially, using these typewriter-like contraptions called laugh boxes. People understandably felt pretty deceived about all of this, and over time they started to feel condescended to also. They came to see laugh tracks as artificial, cheesy, even a little insulting. You think we need you to tell us when to laugh? Despite all the hatred, laugh tracks kept going pretty strong until the early 2000s, when shows like The Office, 30 Rock, and Modern Family showed there was another way. Now, though, the laugh track is really on its deathbed. People still watch shows like Friends and Seinfeld, and networks still make laugh track sitcoms, but many of them are pure nostalgia plays. The Big Bang Theory, which was pretty much the last major laugh track show on TV, ended in 2019. And nothing has really taken its place. Half the live comedies on the top American TV networks still use laugh tracks, but half of those seem to be ending this year. Before I wrote this piece, I honestly couldn't have named a single one. Instinctively, I think a lot of people will think good riddance, but there's also something sort of tragic about all of this. The original purpose of the laugh track was not to tell people when to laugh, but to recreate the experience of being part of an audience. And its decline tracks pretty closely with the decline of communal viewership. We don't gather around a TV in the living room the way we used to. We don't go to theaters as much anymore. We watch our own shows on our own devices, on our own. The laugh track was always an illusion, and maybe there was something dark about the way we were deluding ourselves into feeling like we were part of an audience. But I think there's something even darker, actually, about how we no longer even want the illusion. We're content to laugh on our own.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. I did a show for HBO called Game Theory. And the first episode that we did of the show, we did with no audience. And we were like, we're not going to have an audience. We're not going to laugh track, whatever it is. And he's right that people find it insulting, because I know that I found it insulting, the idea that people need to be told when to laugh. And we did that one episode of that show. And then the next episode, we brought in an audience. Like, we didn't ever have a laugh track. We didn't make anybody laugh. We didn't have any signs that said applause or anything like that. But I am definitely here to tell you, yes, people do need to be told when to laugh sometimes. It is the damnedest and the wildest thing. Like, in the rhythm of how these shows kind of go, depending on what type of comedy or whatever it is that you're doing, they're right about that idea of using it to like generate the feeling of an audience or whatever. But for those of you who remember, our first episode, we did this long thing on Duke basketball that was all about why Black people don't like Duke basketball. And the reason Black people don't like Duke basketball is then white boys is out here slaying our heroes for years and years and years. And then after that, we did a whole museum exhibit at the Schomburg, and we had people walk through at this Black History exhibit, an exhibit called The Boys in Blue, How Duke Basketball Ruined Black America, or something like that. And we walked people through and all of that stuff. We had Jalen Rose as like an actual exhibit, all of these things, right? But I tell you that I had people that I worked with, colleagues, who did not understand that that was a comedy piece. Okay. Now you can, Sean, I'm not lying. Like, I think you've seen all these things. I'm not making this up. This really happened. Now, one might make the argument that that's because we wasn't funny enough. Fine. I get where you're coming from on that. But what was clear is that it was comedy, right? Like, even if you didn't laugh, it was clear that it was comedy. But they needed the laugh track to tell them to laugh. Like, we added an audience and the laughter to the next episode, completely changed the whole feel of it. Like, you got to do a whole different kind of show. Like, the kind of humor that you do, like the shows like Arrested Development or, you know, like, I don't know, Modern Family, right? Like, I don't watch this stuff no more. But, like, those shows, you can do that on that kind of rhythm without an audience laughing. But, like, the kind of the rhythm that most sitcoms had gone for, it doesn't work without some form of laugh there. It just doesn't.
I think people now in today's day and age, like, don't feel a sense of wanting to laugh when they think is funny. Like the like Jacob was saying in the article, like they really need to be told, hey, the punchline is coming. This is when everyone should laugh.
Yes. Like there's that. It's also for the rhythm in production and stuff. Now with the laugh track itself, it's different because you're deciding what the laugh is or whatever, how big the laugh is supposed to be. And yes, there is some nudging, but people buy into that, right? Like people buy into the idea that the laughter is being affirmed by some other source. Just throwing it out there. There's ways to think about the laugh track that I did not think about until we hosted a television show.
All right, here's our last If You Haven't Heard story.
This is Sean Ehling. I'm a writer at Vox.com and the host of the Gray Area podcast. This week, I did an episode about midlife crises, and I basically asked two questions. Is this a real thing? And if it is, why? The answer to the first question is yeah, it's a real thing. There's a decent amount of research on this, and what they found is that life satisfaction takes the form of a U-shaped curve, meaning there's a big dip right in the middle, around 40 or so. And this is true for men and women, and it's true almost everywhere. There are several reasons why, but I'd say the biggest one is regret. Unless you're Kirk Cousins and you found a way to be paid like you're the greatest to ever do it, despite being moderately above average, you're probably not living your ideal life, the life you thought you'd be living 20 years ago. When you're young, the future is bright. But as you get older, life shrinks, you fall into routines, responsibilities pile up, you feel stuck in the consequences of the choices you've already made. And you start playing that roads not traveled game with yourself. So I asked a philosopher who wrote a book about midlife crises how we should respond to this. His advice was to just step back and realize that the world is full of good things and you can't experience all of them. It's tempting to think that you could have had a better life, could have zigged instead of zagged, but if you had lived that alternative life, the things that matter most to you now, like your kids, wouldn't exist. Sure, in that other life, you'd have other friends and maybe another wife and other kids who you'd love, but what makes your life worth living right now is your relationships with the particular people in it. And that would always be the case no matter how your life played out.
Hey, Sean, do we need to come up with like an awards for our show, the Righties, or something like that? Because I think Sean was like, I'm gonna get me one of them Righties. Watch this. He just dropped it in there and kept on going. Like, yo, you got to let that breathe, baby. That Kirk Cousins line, that was well done.
He sent me an email when he sent that. He's a fan of the show and loves your work. And he said, I got something I think Bo would appreciate in my thing. And I had to listen to it. I was like, damn, Kirk Cousins.
Well done. Kirk caught a super duper stray, but he's absolutely right. Kirk's like, duh, who's got it better than us? Nobody. he ain't got nothing to whine about. Man. Oh, yeah. Big life crisis thing. I will say this, though. We always talk about the midlife crisis, Sean, but we just don't talk enough about this like Peter Pan syndrome that's out here. And look, I guess like I'm 43 years old. I have no children. I don't wear anything more than jeans and sneakers. Right. So I can't get so hard on people for like how they are or are not growing up. But at the same time, I feel like if you still out here listening to the same music as the kids and trying to keep up with what the kids are listening to, you may not be in a midlife crisis, but you are apparently at a state of midlife confusion.
Yeah, it's true. I think just the more you adopt youth culture, the more you're remembering and wanting that, you know, so to some degree.
And I refuse. Why would I want to be like them? Like, yeah. I mean, and that's no disrespect to them. They ain't trying to get like, well, they are trying to get like me in the sense that they want to get to be 43 one day. But I ain't trying to get like them. The last thing in this world I want to be doing is the same thing as 22-year-olds. I just, I don't want us to be hanging out. Like, when I went to Kansas City over the weekend, it was a lot of like 22-year-olds in the spot because it's Kansas City. You just going to have to do that. And I was like, we ain't never supposed to be in the same place, big dog. Ever. Ever, I tell you. Ever.
All right, we had a bit of a ask me anything type situation, so I got three really good questions. Here's the first one.
Hey, Bomani. It's David from San Diego. I always love your show. I think you're one of the smartest and most unique minds out there. So I'm really curious to hear your take on the career and the significance of the Beastie Boys.
Yo, so the thing about the Beastie Boys is, I mean, there is no more amazing remake in this world. And I want to be clear about the remake or the rebrand. I do think that this rebrand came as a natural evolution and guys becoming better people and evolving in all of this. But Sean, do you know the original title for License to Ill?
I do not.
Look it up. I don't feel comfortable saying it out loud. But the idea, and jump on when you find it. But the idea that they could start from where they were and end up being like the Free Tibet guys is pretty impressive. They also have a really consistent catalog.
Yo,
right?
Whoa.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Holy
isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Can't wait till the YouTube chat gets a hold of that one.
I'm gonna hide my face for a sec here.
Yes. Like, imagine having to explain, no, guys, that's not what we're going to do. Oh, the Lang Fu in the chat has discovered what the original title of License to Ill was. License to Ill was an incredible record. Paul's Boutique was an incredible record. But the Beastie Boys are also, like, they the OGs on what we talk about all the time. Well, these white boys come out here and they be rapping and wicker wicker and getting down with all that stuff. And then somebody be like, yo, your true calling has come. And they start handing out them guitars. And then they go from there. Now, I know that you're going to say that the Beastie Boys was on that kick before then. And that's fair. And that's understandable. All of those things being the case. But they are great. But I don't want to say that white people like took them back from us. But we have to acknowledge the white people treat them completely differently than they treat all the other rap entities. Nobody else was allowed to rap the exact same way. Too Short changed how he rapped more than they did. Like, nobody was allowed to do that quite in the way that they were and still be treated as some sort of major creative force. Like, not everybody could pull that off, but ain't none of that really got anything to do with them. They came around, right place, right time, put out bangers, right place, right time. They have been very creative and experimental and all of those things. But it's just so wild that black people really, really, really rock with License to Ill. It was the best. By the way, it was the best selling rap album of all time when it was out. But obviously that was because white people. But black people really rock with the Beastie Boys and then didn't. They just kind of stopped. Just kind of stopped. No beef. It just kind of stopped.
Bo, as a quick little preview and teaser for our upcoming series, do you think we're going to cover Ill Communication, which was dropped in 94?
I do not think we're going to cover Ill Communication, because quite honestly, by the time Ill Communication comes out in 94, and that's the one with Sabotage on it, right?
Yep.
By the time Ill Communication comes out, I don't think of them as being a hip-hop act anymore. Like, they're kind of a alt rock band by then. Check Your Head, I think, is still very much a hip hop record. That one bangs, right? I think that was still very much a hip hop record. I don't think of Ill Communication as a hip hop record. I mean, it has hip hop elements to it, right? But I think of their records, that's probably, to me, the least hip hop of all of them. But we are doing a series on great records from 94. Great rap albums in 94. We're doing a series. We have recorded three of them so far. We're going to get a few more of them out there ready for y'all in a spurs. So get ready for that. Y'all wanted more music content to be YouTube exclusive. Just so you know, you're going to need to go on the tubes in order to get it. Sean has done an amazing job in producing those and producing me. So check that out. Should we tell them the ones we recorded already?
Yeah, let's do it. Our first one drops May 2nd. We don't know the order, but we do know the order if you want to tell them with the first three. It's really exciting.
All right, well, the first one is, it came out in November 93, but Doggy Style is the first one that we going to do. And then we going to get you to the Illmatic, and we going to get you We got something playlistic. We got a few more. We got a few more that's coming for you. And those of you who know my taste will know some of these that we go on with. So this is going to be a good time. Check us out.
All right, let's drop the second voicemail question.
Well, my name is Josh calling from Prince George's County, Maryland. Big-time fan, long-time listener. My question is, have you ever been starstruck when you met somebody? Like, people say they met Prince and they see his aura around him. Have you ever had an experience like that with anyone? All right, thank you.
All right, I don't know if I got, like, the aura, right? And I'm trying to avoid the, like, starstruck with the person knew who I was, right? That doesn't, that's a little self-serving. I don't really want to do that, but, you know, one day we'll flex. I do remember the first time I was ever starstruck seeing somebody in the mall. I saw Dominique Wilkins at Lenox in 1998, and I ain't never seen, I seen Lenox keep going for everybody up until that point. Lenox shut down for Dominique. I saw Chuck D and DMC on the same day separately, and I just like grabbed my chest. I couldn't believe that I'd seen them. But very recently, I was at the Dumbo House, and I saw Anderson .Paak sitting by himself, and I was there with somebody, and I was by myself, and I saw him. And for those of you who don't know, that is like I'm Stan level with that dude. Like that's me. That's my guy. That's my number one. Like I went and bought Venice on record on vinyl the other day just because I needed to have all of his shit on vinyl. Like I'm that dude. And I saw him and I had had something happen one time that led me to believe that he knew who I was. And so I decided to go over and talk to him. And I get halfway there. And the person that's with him looks over his shoulder and sees me and looks at him. And I'm like, uh-oh, this isn't going to go well, is it? Sean, it didn't. It didn't go well at all. It didn't go well. He clearly has absolutely no idea who I am. And he really didn't want to be bothered. And that I made it as quick as I could. It went away. I was starstruck. I wish I had been a little bit more starstruck. Because if I had been a little bit more starstruck, I'd have kept my ass where I was.
I'm shocked I didn't hear the story. And I, you know, obviously we're hoping to go see him at the bowl when he does Malibu. If any,
we going. We ain't no hoping. Ain't no hoping. We going to see him. I'll put it like this. Me going to see him at the bowl. I don't know about you. Like I'm gonna try to look out for you. If you ain't trying to go, you ain't got to. But I'm gonna be there. Please believe that.
A small bit I do when I meet like very famous people that I'm starstruck, I just say congrats on everything and I go for a handshake and it always kind of devalues the aspect of me going up and being geeked out. But yeah, that's tough scenes for you.
Well, the worst for me is I'd be wanting to be left alone. And so I'm like, I'm violating how I would want to be treated. But I was too deep. I couldn't. I said, oh, no, I'll give you this one. The time I met Andre 3000, which has been the same header photo on my Twitter account for 10 years, because I got word that he was posted up at Governor's Ball by a friend. And so I'm there and I didn't want to ask him for a picture because I knew that wouldn't work. And so I asked my friend to take pictures while me and my man talked to him. And so me and my man, we like try to hype each other. I'm like, you go first. No, you go first. No, you go first. Like we're going like this, right? Like we are jittery. Like we're just like, all right, we're about to go meet Andre. We're about to go meet Andre. All right, you ready? All right, be cool. Okay, be cool. Okay, be cool. And so we went and we talked to him. He's like, I feel like I know you from somewhere. And I'm on ESPN. That don't seem to be working. But we talked for a good like 10 minutes. He was there with his then girlfriend and it turned out that her mama was an Evening Jones listener. You know what I'm saying?
Huge.
So me and her got cool or whatever, but yeah, no. I had almost forgotten about that one. Like me and my man, we're grown men at this point. I'm 33, 34 years old, somewhere there. Me and my man are just like, all right, we're going to do this. While also being like, yeah, we're going to meet Andre.
That's fire. It's crazy how celebrities make you kind of just act like a kid again.
Well, it's only some of them, man. Because, look, I've been covering this stuff for a long time. You know what I mean? Like, after a while, you kind of get numb to it and you've been in these spaces. But Andre just posted up with his son watching a Childish Gambino set. That was a little different.
All right, Bo, here's our last voicemail today.
Hey, Bo. It's Chris and Pitt, longtime listener, sometimes caller. Love the show. Absolutely love it. Of course, Foxworth Friday. God damn. But yeah, I had a question. Ask you anything. Have you ever lost an argument to your older brother? Like an argument, a debate? You knew it wasn't going to go to the mat or anything like that, but just like just heavy duty sparring with your older brother. and how'd it go? Yeah, just curious. Anyways, love the show. Keep doing what you're doing. Shout out to Sean. All right, later.
Yeah, appreciate it, Chris. I need you to understand this, though. My brother is 13 years older than me, which is to say, I think I lost every argument to my brother up until somewhere around the turn of the 21st century. I don't really know how many arguments that I think it was pretty. I don't have any that like stand out here. No. It was gonna be an argument loser. The only time I feel like I won an argument where I needed to win one was he was so sure at some point that Tito Jackson played the bass for the Jackson 5, and I'm like, nah, Tito played guitar. Tito played guitar. He just couldn't let that go. I was like, Tito played guitar. Like, this is even though when I think Tito was getting his ass beat in the movie for like playing with his daddy's guitar. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I was so adamant. Tito played guitar. And he was so sure that Tito played the bass. Because I mean, to be honest with you, Tito is a bass player name. And so he was so sure that Tito played the bass. And then he says, fine, then who played the bass? I said, I don't know. Who played the drums? And he was like, oh, good call. I remember that one. You take the W's where you can get them. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Sean has prize picks for the people.
Yep, Monday night, big slate of NBA playoff action. Prize picks, thanks for the bonus. Nikola Jokic, 0.5 points. He's clearly going to get more than that, so that's a win there. Jalen Brunson, 11.5 rebounds and assists. I'll take more. And Jared Allen, 11.5 rebounds. Let's take more there.
I'm just saying, if it was Jontae Porter, you can't count on that 0.5. You know what I'm saying?
Just throwing it out there. Now it's an adjective, right? Don't Jontae Porter it.
There we go. I don't think that's what adjective means, but it's whatever. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Yeah, it happens to the best, baby. It happens to us. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. That Sean Yu handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thanks to Peter Kafka of Business Insider. Check out his story on kids being bored with VR goggles at businessinsider.com. Thanks to Jacob Stern of The Atlantic. Check out his story on the Laugh Track at theatlantic.com. And thanks to Sean the Righty Illing. Check out his story on the midlife crisis at vox.com. Remember, follow us. Subscribe, like, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.